This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're going to be here until 11 o'clock. And you guys all woke up. The lines are all ringing early, which is great. We appreciate that. Because we're here till 11. So getting on early is a good idea. But as usual and customary, there is a lot of news out there.
Yep.
And some pretty important news that we want to talk about. And the first story we want to talk about is what's going on with the UK and Apple.
Yep.
So the folks in the UK have decided that you can't have encrypted communications.
Right.
It's a new law.
Well, let's back the cart up just a tiny bit.
Yeah.
You can have encrypted communications long as their data agency has a back door into whatever you send.
Right. Which is, of course, not private then.
Right.
It's really an all or nothing thing here.
Right.
And this is pretty scary, actually, in a democracy like the UK, blocking the ability to have a private conversation. And so in response, Apple has pulled end-to-end cloud encryption. So what that means is when you have your encrypted iPhone, the data that was going to the iCloud as your backup, you know, that hold the days of the naked nudies where people were getting in, you know, it's now more possible because with the encryption gone, they can access what's on your iCloud. They can't get to your phone.
Right.
They can't get to your phone.
That is still encrypted.
Right. They can't make you do anything there. Not that you're doing anything wrong. But they can get to your iCloud account because Apple's taking away the encryption because the UK says you can't have private conversations. And I want to play something, and Carolyn's going to play something for us. It's a news interview of Ms. Whitaker. She's the president of Signal, which offers encrypted end-to-end communications. This is something I want you to hear to understand kind of the context of what's going on. So go ahead, Carolyn.
Signal.
All right. So what's going on here is that the UK they want to have a back door. They want to surveil. They want to make sure your speech is the right speech. Of course, they're using the most egregious, awful thing to predicate the reason to surveil everybody. But of course, we already know in the UK, they're surveilling all sorts of speech on social media. They're sending folks in. We just saw that on 60 Minutes where the police go in there for things that you might have posted on Facebook. It's getting a little crazy. So with the Apple pulling the encryption, it means if you're an Apple customer, your communications now are no longer encrypted.
Well, your communication between your phone and your the iCloud.
Right. So people want to look, if somebody wants to look at that information. All the other aspects too is they don't even have to report that they're looking.
Right.
So you don't even know. Not that you did anything wrong, but if somebody thinks they want to check whatever you've got on there, they can check it. So this is disturbing. Yes, of course, the predication of child pornography is awful as far as using that as a reason we should all be surveilled. But Signal's trying to make the point there, and this is the same thing with Apple. Okay, fine, we'll just take encryption out of there, and then you as a customer have to decide whether or not you want to use that tool or not. And it's a very interesting situation, and it's a little shocking that the UK would do this because, like she said, the default has been for hundreds of thousands of years that we're private. Mm-hmm. Our communications should be private. So I'm not saying I have any answers, but you guys should know about this. And we'll put a link up there to our Computer Talk with Tab. You can read the story. Other news quickly, Dennis. We have the biggest cyber heist ever of fake money.
Cyber heist? What are we talking about here?
Bybits, Ethereum. Their cold wallet. This is a wallet that's supposed to be kind of air gap disconnected. That's why it's called cold.
Yeah.
Was hacked in the largest breach, $1.4 billion of value, supposedly, of fake money.
What?
Has been hacked. Yes.
$1.4 billion?
Yes. Yeah, somebody valued all that fake zeros and ones at $1.4 billion. The weird thing is the Bybit people say, well, they've got enough money to actual money to cover the heist. So if you've got $1.4 billion in cash, why are you in the crypto business? I mean, invest in something that has value, throws off some interest, you can somehow cover the loss, but people are withdrawing like crazy, I guess. This happened yesterday afternoon. It's a massive breach. They're saying it's the North Koreans, right? That's what I've read.
Okay. I completely believe that.
And lots of people are wondering, again, this is a huge breach of people's fake money. And pig butchering is going on to the tune of $5 billion a year. I don't know how many more examples of this ding-a-ling approach to any kind of value in this cyber world of crypto you need.
Well,
but a fool and his money are soon parted.
Well, one question I have is because I was always told that the blockchain is secure.
And this is a cold wallet.
Question number two, how did a cold wallet get violated?
Right.
But first of all, how do you steal from a blockchain that is supposed to be completely secure?
Right.
How does that happen?
And they listed the blockchain. So those of you libertarians who think all this stuff is private and nobody's going to know who goes where, well, they know where the wallets are. And now they're asking other sources to debank. Uh-oh, are you afraid of debanking in the real world? That's why you went to crypto? Whoa. Well, they're going to ask you to debank the bad guys, make sure their wallets are no longer usable. Just when you thought crypto is a way to be the libertarian dream of no control, these guys are asking them, of course, to disapprove any transactions out of these wallets. Same thing that was used for the FBI to notice where the wallets are going to with the other folks that were getting scanned that we talked about last week.
Right. And that's really part of the lesson here.
Right.
Because that when I was talking about how secure the blockchain is, I was being facetious. It isn't secure at all. Actually, it's the opposite.
So we'll
it's a public ledger.
Right.
And if people analyze it correctly, they can find out stuff.
So we'll put this link up there for you too. This is Ethereum. So we're gonna be back after a short break. Steve, Vincent, Tom, and MJ, you guys got on early. We appreciate it. We're gonna get right to your calls. We'll be right back after this.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back, and let's get right to your calls. We appreciate you guys joining us so early on a Saturday morning. Let's go to our first caller, Steve in Woodbury was on the line first. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Thank you very much for taking the call.
Yeah.
I'm having something odd started happening with my copy of Malwarebytes yesterday.
All right.
I'm on the internet a lot. I usually run it once a day. Mm-hmm. And normally it takes about an hour and a half, and runs through about 700,000-800,000 files.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yesterday I started it, and it just kept going. It ran for, what have I got here, 14 hours and change, and went to over 1 million files. I started it this morning. It's still running. It's got 3 hours in now, 828,000 files and counting. And like, I don't have any idea what it's doing.
Yeah.
It just seems. And now, two other points I think might be relevant is that yesterday, Windows did actually two updates, 23H2 and 24H2. And I've also noticed that my Brave browser is running a little slow. So I don't know if any of those things are connected or if they're all just coincidental. You guys give me a clue here. Is this actually the way it's supposed to be running now, or have I got some kind of an issue here?
I think that what Microsoft calls feature updates, which would bring you up to 24H2, may have changed how the computer works, possibly how the drive is being accessed, and causing any kind of a scanning tool, and in case of Brave, a browser, to take a little longer to do what it needs to do. I would suggest looking for any driver updates from the manufacturer, because they may have issued driver updates that compensate for anything that's changed in Windows 24H2. And it sounds like your computer was a bit out of date because it went first to 23H2 and then 24. So you caught up to about 2 years of changes in almost one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that can really pull a rug out from under the computer a little bit. We've seen that like in the Tab customer base, if somebody's computer gets feature updates from, you know, a couple of years, and then the computer starts acting funny. But the first thing I would do is look for driver updates from your manufacturer.
As far as Malwarebytes scanning everything, that sounds like a setting, either a quick scan went to a full scan, because the amount of files on your computer didn't just exponentially change.
No, it didn't. Here's the thing. That file count probably happened because of those two feature updates.
Oh, that's true.
And there are remnant update files from both of those.
Good point.
And they will actually be purged over the next week, because it will not keep those. It leaves them behind so that you can roll back.
Yep, good point.
But after like 7 or 10 days, that option is gone, and those files are going to get purged.
And the other
thing, I wouldn't do anything about it at the moment.
And the other thing too, Steve, you don't have to scan constantly. We recommend Malwarebytes as a remediation tool. So, you know, scanning it constantly just because you use the internet is probably a waste of time. you know, we recommend you configure your machine to use OpenDNS. Have you done that?
Yes, I have that set up on the machine.
Okay. All right. So if you've got that running and you've got Defender running, I would tell you not to bother running Malwarebytes per se in a scan until and if you become impacted by something, because it's a good remediation tool. But to sit there and have it run 14 hours scanning files just because is probably not necessary. You can have it sitting there also as a detection.
It normally doesn't run like that. Well, the thing is, on the updates, I generally let the updates run, and I've been getting all kinds of cumulative updates.
Yeah, yeah, you're catching up
to this point. I'd see 2023H2, and then KB505-1989 was the last cumulative.
Yep,
and it just did a full update on this 23 and 24.
Right,
but the Windows Defender. It has a peculiarity in that if you forget to turn off the sleep mode, it stops the scan, which I don't understand why they would set it up to do that. But, you know, and you start it off and then you walk away from the machine. And then if the screen goes blank, the scan.
Steve, we're going to go up against a hard break here, though. But I hope we helped you as far as the reason you're scanning further because you've updated your system. But we're out of time. I'm sorry. Thank you, though, for calling in. And it seems we're back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're here till 11 o'clock. And you guys are nice enough to get on early. And let's get right to your calls. We're going to go to Vincent in Downingtown, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Vincent. What's up? You there, Vincent? You there, Vincent? Hello? I don't know where Vincent is. We'll have to put him back on hold, I guess. Can you put him on hold? Oh, there we go. I got it. Let's go to Tom in Harmington next. You there, Tom?
Hi.
Good morning. What's going to do for you, sir?
Oh, boy. I'm outside. I got to go in. I'm splitting firewood. I got two problems.
Yes, sir.
Remember last week I called you and I told you how the Brave browser was running slow?
Sure.
Okay. Your suggestion was to use restart, that it would clear things out better. So when it was starting to run slow again, I did the restart. I had window updates on hold for 7 days, and I was about 3 or 4 days into that. And as soon as I did the restart, it kicked off the Windows update.
Yep.
Hadn't backed anything up. It was during a storm when I would never do this in case the phone lines went down and I lost power.
Mm-hmm.
Why did it restart?
Why did it start up?
Why did it start when the Windows update when I did a restart when it was on hold?
Oh. Timing-wise, Microsoft felt, well, we're going to let the update happen earlier than we said. Or these are other updates, not the ones that were held. Microsoft's always sending down updates, so maybe the held updates happen. What do you think, Dennis?
Sometimes those controls
don't work
the way you expect. honestly,
that's probably the right answer.
I do know that there is a difference with those controls on the Windows Home operating system versus Pro.
They're a little more stringent on Pro?
Yeah, because Pro has logic in it that looks to policy.
Yeah.
Even local machine policy, not necessarily, you know, a corporate domain policy.
Right.
And it has that extra check.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that plays a part in it.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, what Eric said is when Microsoft wants to update, they do.
Yeah.
They actually forced an update through, I think, 15 years ago with Windows XP because of a massive
exploit
that was out there. And I think they just forced it right through on everybody's computers.
Yeah.
So here's what's sad about this.
Yeah.
Normally it takes 20, 30, 40 minutes to do a Windows update.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This took about 5 or 6 minutes. And I said, gee, that was awfully fast. So I went and I looked for more updates.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, there was another update. So I ran that, It took, again, maybe 5 or 6 minutes. The version changed on the first update. The Win version changed on the first update, but it remained the same on the second update. So I don't know what that means, but I thought it was kind of odd since it was all part of this.
Yeah, I think I know what it is.
All right.
Microsoft has come up with a clever way of handling updates these days.
Hmm.
And they don't use this with everyone that they deploy, but they do it with some of them. It's called an enablement.
An enablement?
Yes.
It's a feature upgrade.
What happens is...
You've been enabled.
Perhaps sometime in maybe the last time that the computer updated before, you know, this happened.
Yeah.
It actually loaded code for a Windows update.
That was going to be coming.
And it's stored on the computer.
In anticipation.
Place. Yes. It's in place.
Yeah.
Then... another update comes through, which is very quick, and all it does is to enable that code to be run the next time the computer boots.
Makes sense.
All right? And I think that these updates that you were looking at that were very quick were enablement updates for other code that is now active.
Okay. Here's my second question. Uh-huh. I don't like – you know what the lock screen is?
Yeah, the lock screen, sure.
Okay, so when I put my computer to sleep and I wake it up, it goes to the lock screen, and it shows me these miserable pictures that I'm sick and tired of seeing. I constantly tell them I don't like this picture, and
they don't care
through all of them. They just keep showing me the same ones I don't like.
Yep.
So I said, I've had it with this. And I finally figured out that this is called Windows Spotlight. So I changed Windows Spotlight to be Picture, and now it just shows a picture I have on my PC.
Yeah. Yep.
However, there's two other options on this screen for the lock screen, and it says get fun facts, tips, and more from Windows and Cortina on your lock screen. It's turned on, so I turned it off.
Okay.
The other one says show lock screen background picture on the sign in screen, so I turned it off. Everything was fine. I got up the next day, I turned the PC on. The desktop loaded with all the icons on the left hand side that normally are there. There was nothing on the taskbar or the system tray except for that Cortina icon. I had no control of my mouse. Essentially, I had a boat anchor. I was completely locked out of the computer. I couldn't type anything in. I couldn't get to a browser. I remembered from the night before that there was a keyboard command to get into settings where I could get the personalization and back to the lock screen. And I says, I got to turn these things back on because they got to be the thing that's causing the problem. Fortunately, I left Edge as an icon on the desktop, and it was able to launch that. And I found the command. It was the window key with the letter I. I turned these things back on, the two things I read to you.
Yep.
Everything's working normal. I mean, I couldn't even use my mouse. Nothing was functioning.
Now, it shouldn't have caused that issue, but it could have. It shouldn't have, but it could have. Yeah, I know. It does seem like it did. Well, the problem with Microsoft, Tom, is you really can't use that logic. Just because you turn those things off does not necessarily mean that that was the reason after a reboot that was the problem. You did do recent updates, right? So you really have no idea. I mean, you can use your logic that you're using, and it makes sense, right? I agree with you. But it may not have been that. It may have been just due to the update, something else occurred or some other factor on your machine. It's not as black and white as you'd think.
The only way to prove that what I think is right is to turn these both back off, shut the computer down, bring it back up, and see if I end up in the same boat.
Yes.
Yes.
And I guarantee you almost, I'll give you probably a 80% chance that you will not end up in the same boat.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And that's the thing about what we do. You're going to be like, okay, it worked fine. You're going to ask yourself why. And if you've ever listened to the show and everybody says all of a sudden, it's not. It's like after every reboot of that computer, after every load of software, imagine if you're making some lovely soup and someone just dumps a whole thing of like garlic powder into it, right? It's the same soup except for the garlic powder you just dumped in there. Now it's not the same soup. And you're like, why does my soup all of a sudden taste so garlicky? Right? That's exactly what happens with Microsoft. You think it's your refrigerator is the same thing. I put milk in it, and now all of a sudden it doesn't work anymore. No, that's not the logic connection here. Microsoft has a whole new flavor of operating system that is different than the one I'm running and the one Dennis is running. They're not the same. If they were the same, we'd have a lot easier time with it. But they're all different based on the updates that are applied and the software that's applied.
Unbelievable.
It's an awful recipe.
I'll let you go. By the way, I'm on speakerphone. Normally you tell people to get off speakerphone, and I forgot I was on speakerphone because I was outside. Is this a problem?
No, you sound okay, but radio etiquette would prefer you to be on the phone itself. Yeah. You sound better. You sound great. You got a great speakerphone there, Tom.
Yeah, you've got a good quality speakerphone.
We appreciate it.
Well, I was totally out of breath, and I was having a hard time talking to you initially because I was outside splitting firewood, and I expected that other guy to come on.
Yeah, me too.
And I knew I had a couple of minutes before I had to be ready to talk to you.
I hear you. I understand. And then all of a sudden, the spotlight went right to you.
All of a sudden.
All right, guys.
All right, Tom. Thanks.
Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, we'll step out for a quick break, and we will try to get to Vincent in Downingtown, Pennsylvania. And MJ, hang on, too. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back. All right, we are spacing out here on Computer Talk. Thanks to Carolyn. We appreciate it. But we're here till 11 o'clock, and we appreciate you guys. Real quick before we go to your calls, and we're going to go to Vincent in a second. Hopefully he's there. But I just found this funny. So CPTV or Public Radio, Public Radio, Eddie Martinez has a story. The governor was down at Fairfield University at the annual Capitol Breakfast on February 19th. And he goes, data centers are already a reality in Connecticut, but according to Governor Lamont, he wants more of them. He wants to prioritize data centers, Dennis.
Okay.
And he goes, this is a quote, "We are prepared to double down in terms of quantum computing, a major center down here in Fairfield County, an AI center as well in the Stanford area." He's going to double down, Dennis.
Double down?
He's doubling down.
Whoa.
On the data centers. The funny part of this story, though, that I find the funniest is that the folks over at NPR, Connecticut Public Radio, reached out to the governor's office and said, "Hey, how many data centers do we have?"
Okay.
They don't know.
What?
You can't make it up.
They want more of them, but they don't know how many they've already got.
Correct. They're going to double down on what, Dennis? This is the looniness that is Connecticut. Again, we don't understand how electricity works. Guys, you need a lot of electricity, it seems, unless you're in China, to run a data center. You don't know how it works because we have the third or second highest bills in the country, and you're going to double down, which we've already had the Peter Detweiler out here talking about what will happen to ratepayers if we add more data centers here. Guess what? You and I are going to pay
more and more on our bills
for electricity because we got to double down because data centers are just the coolest there, Dennis. How many do you have there, Governor? I don't know. That's just where we are here in Connecticut. I just found that it tickled me. And of course, the headline tickles me too. Connecticut wants more data centers for AI, but challenges remain. That's the headline. I would have put, if it was me as a reporter, I would have said, "Governor wants more of data centers, but doesn't even know how many we have."
Right.
That's the proper headline, right? But no, challenges remain. I'll tell you there's challenges. But I'll put this link up here for you guys can read it yourself. And I'm not trying to give the governor a hard time, but dude, double down on what? You guys don't even know what you're doubling down on.
Right.
Doesn't really smack of
competency. He can't measure his doubling.
He can't. But we're going to double down, man. Let's go to Vincent in Downingtown. Speaking of doubling down, Pennsylvania. You there, Vincent?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, sir. We can.
Okay, the first question has to do with my modem.
Yes, sir.
And when I moved in here 8 years ago, I bought my own modem.
Congratulations.
My question is, what is the longevity of these devices?
Well, it comes down to your network, right? You can run them for a long time, but your network could support a better codec, a better encryption connection or transmission method. We haven't even used this term in a while. What's it called?
What?
Dosis. Thank you. I was trying to think of it. Dosis or doxis.
What I was going to say is during the 8 years that you've had that modem, your carrier may have upped its dosis game and may now be supporting a better protocol, and you might you might benefit from getting a new modem only for that reason.
Right.
We're not talking about the age of the device. We're talking about the DOCSIS support.
Right.
But I would still say, you know, an eight-year-old device will work.
Yes.
But when these modems get past maybe what, 5 years, give or take, they're not actually mechanical in nature, but the electronics inside can degrade over time. It's really hard to put a finger on how it works or why, but just the fact that they're up and running 24/7 for years and years and years at a time, and they have a little bit of latent heat and all of that, and sometimes the circuitry just does, it starts to diminish its capability in very small marginal ways.
Yeah.
But it can build up over time across the whole device.
All right. Now, this thing apparently is rated at DOCSIS 3.0. Is that obsolete?
3.0 is a little bit old. But, yeah. 3.1 is more common right now.
Yeah, you'd have
and
to check
I think
with
there
your
are
network.
Even up. There are even other standards. Yeah, you call your this
ISP.
Has to be cable.
Yeah.
Call them and then ask them what they support. They should be able to give you a list of supported modems that they will accept, because not every model of modem is going to work with them for whatever reason. They're very touchy.
Yeah.
Okay. I certainly won't ask them for any specifications, but I will ask them for compatible modems.
Right, exactly. and they'll send you a list. They may even just tell you to go to a website that they've got that's got the list. Most of them are very public about it, so it's not like secret information.
No.
You just need to know where to go to get the right one, the right list.
Then you'll have to tell them.
And they'll tell you which DOCSIS level is now current with them.
Okay. Look, I'm no electronics whiz, but
not either.
What this modem is supporting is plugged into a wireless router, and it's an Apple router, also of about 8 years vintage.
Yeah.
And it's running multiple iPads. It's running multiple Sonos components. It's also running multiple Apple TVs.
Yeah.
And how is it working? Very well indeed.
Oh. Then you're fine.
You're fine. I wouldn't do anything.
Yeah. Don't dump any garlic powder in this recipe. You're doing fine.
All right. Okay. Okay. Question number two.
Yes. Uh-huh.
My desktop computer was 8 years old, so I recently bought another one. And 8 years ago, I bought the least expensive Apple iMac that they had. And it's been going along pretty good, but I'm being left behind with operating systems, and it's getting sluggish.
Yeah.
So I said, well, if I bought the cheapest iMac 8 years ago, well, what the hell? I'll buy the cheapest iMac today, and I'll just set the same thing except better.
Fair logic.
Well, it's different.
Uh-oh.
That's the big problem. This iMac 7 running the M4 chip is a lot different.
All right.
And it's my fault. I should have paid more attention, but I did not. But the thing only has two USB-C ports, only two.
Yeah.
Now, for another $200, I could have got a hotkey iMac with four ports, but the new device, which I never saw before, would have the provision for an Ethernet port. And this new device is a so-called power egg. It consists, obviously, of a transformer and a diode. And that feeds the iMac. And I know it's obvious why they did that. They packed in so many electronics components that they didn't have room for the transformer and the diode. And it's also a heat generator. The damn thing is rated at 143 watts.
Hmm.
So for the other $200, which I didn't know anything about and was never explained to me.
Yeah.
For that power egg has an Ethernet port.
Yeah. So it's like a dock. It's a dock for your device. Yeah.
Which you can use to connect with my wireless router. And the router sends the signal back, the way I piece it out. The router sends a signal back down to this power egg, which then runs it up into the power input connection.
Yes, USB-C. You're right, sir. You are correct that it's a typical dock. Well, hang on. We're running out of time. The music is playing. So do you have a second to wait and let us pick you back up after the news?
I have no choice. I'm at your disposal.
Right, Vincent. All right, because we want to hear what your question is, so hang on a little longer. But you're on the right track. That sounds correct. And MJ, hang on. And two lines open for you, 860-522-9842 is the number. We are broadcasting live. We're trying something on YouTube, too. I haven't even checked if it's working to see if we're streaming there and over at our Facebook page where Zuckerberg might deem it worthy. So far, he's going to deem it worthy. Mike G's posted everything to our Facebook page as well over at the Computer Talk with Tab Network. And so is Dennis over to our main webpage, computertalkwithtab.com, which also works if it's the name of the show. We'll be right back.